In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Good morning and welcome to the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. I am your host, Paul Metters, here at First String Sports, Blackstone and Sierra Avenues. This is we call it the place to be here. I've done every show in the Letterman's Jacket room. This is their big seller. Letterman's Jackets, it's a staple. If you're a high school athlete, you got to get your Letterman's jacket. First String Sports has been my sponsor from day one, and they've been incredible. So looks like it's going to be a nice Saturday, a little bit on the hot side. In the last few days, it's been warm for sure. The Fresno summer heat is about upon us. So First String Sports, come on down here, check out all the sporting goods that they have here for sale. Again, thank you guys for tuning in, listening to 1430 ESPN every Saturday since August. I think I missed a couple. Yeah, I think there was one Saturday fell on Christmas, and then the other Saturday fell on New Year's Day, so we weren't able to do a show. But, yeah, every show here at First String Sports, 10 to 12, every Saturday morning has been an absolute blast. We're high school centric, talking about high school sports, breaking down the games, reviewing games, previewing games, bringing on guests, talking to coaches. This has been just a wild and wacky week in high school sports. It's playoff time, and there's been a lot of talk, a lot of controversy about playoff seedings and only eight teams in Division I, and then it trickles down. Was there going to be a lot of upsets? Or there's some big schools that have been dropped down. How's that gonna play out? And yeah, sure enough, a lot of wild and wacky and interesting things happened this week, and we're gonna be talking about that throughout the show. After the break, Central baseball coach Mitch Mulligan will join us. The number 9 seeded in Division II Central Grizzlies are in the semifinals after beating St. Joe's on Thursday 4-3. And then Reedley in their opening game, they went on the road. They beat Reedley 5-3 in extra innings. So we'll be talking to Mitch, and if the biggest thing that happened on Tuesday night was Kerman being upset by St. Joe's, who then Central beat 4-3. St. Joe's was the 16th seed, and they beat number 1 seeded Kerman. And we've talked a lot about Kerman on the show. I actually had Coach Jared Coleman on last week, and they're at the end of a magical season, 28-0, and sure enough, the magical season ended with that loss to St. Joe's. And so that, I even tweeted out after that loss, I tweeted out, man, that was a gut punch to me. And it was a gut punch, not because, not disrespecting St. Joe's at all. I mean, they went on the road and beat the number 1 seed, but a gut punch for the players and the kids and the community who, again, were having a phenomenal season, just coming to an end like that. How it just kind of hurts. So talking with Mitch about the landscape of playoff baseball and, what needs to be tweaked and what might need to be changed. But, yeah, Grizzlies are having a really good run right now. At the bottom of this hour, around 10:35, I have an author, Brad Baluchian. He's the author of the Wax Pack book, On the Road in Search of Baseball's Afterlife. Now, this is the first time I've had an author on the show, and I had him booked about a month ago. I knew this was going to be high school playoff time, but this book is probably my favorite baseball book of all time. If you guys are near your phone or computer, just go ahead and Google search the Wax Pack book. Let me give you a little bit of a synopsis of what this book was about. So what Brad did is he opened up a pack of 1986 Topps baseball cards. And he said, whatever cards I pull, I am going to take a summer and a road trip, and I am going to search and look for and track down all of the baseball player cards that I pull, all those guys. So he pulled 14 players and one checklist. Some of the players that he pulled, I'll just give you a few examples. Carlton Fisk, Dwight Gooden, Gary Templeton, Gary Pettis, Lee Mazzilli, Rance Mullinix, Rick Sutcliffe, Steve Yeager, Vince Coleman. This is an example of some of the players. So what he did is he tried to track them down. He set up interviews. Some guys were very gracious. Some of these guys are, not Hall of Famers and not star-studded names. And so some of the guys were very, very, accommodating. Let's just put it that way. And some guys weren't. He actually couldn't find a couple of the players. But it was it's an incredible read. Brad is a great writer. He had some crazy experiences, as you might imagine. He hopped in a 2002 Honda Accord, so that was his car of choice during this trip. If Bob Costa says the Wax Pack book is one of the most interesting and pleasing baseball-themed books I have read in quite some time, an original idea brought to fruition with graceful prose, a sense of humor, empathy, and insight. So I am very much looking forward to talking to Brad at the bottom of the hour. At the top of the hour, talking with Gabe Camarillo. Gabe is definitely on the beat for high school sports. We were actually at the Bullard and Liberty baseball game on Tuesday, so we'll be talking about that game, the landscape of playoffs, some of the upsets that happen, and preview some of the games that are going to be happening next week as well. At the bottom of hour number two, our 1430 ESPN Student Athlete of the Week, we're going South Valley, and Kingsburg 2 sports star Ethan Winslow is coming in. Ethan is one of the top two-way players in the Central Section. The number one Vikings are still alive, unlike a couple other number one seeds. They got a really big playoff game on Tuesday. They're hoping to win a Central Section D3 championship. He's also the quarterback on the football team. So looking forward to talking to Ethan at the bottom of hour number two. Now, let's talk about these playoffs. Are they fun? Are they controversial? Were you guys shocked? Well, yeah, I was on Tuesday. Let me just give a little synopsis on what went down on Thursday as well. So Tuesday we talked about the upset where Kerman went down 3-2 to St. Joe's. But on Thursday, what a wild and wacky Thursday it was. So let me just go over the seedings again and the matchups that were out there for Division I. So it was Buchanan, number one Buchanan, topped ranked by Cal High Sports, against number 8 Frontier, number 4 Clovis West against Rigetti, number 3 Bullard against number 6 Liberty, number 2 Stockdale against number 7 San Joaquin Memorial. Upset, 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 held serve. That's what went down. The Frontier-Buchanan game. If I said that Buchanan scored 11 runs against Frontier, I'd be like, yeah, they won 11-2, 11-4, but no. Buchanan lost 17-11. 17-11. Can't remember the last time Buchanan had given up 17 runs. Frontier got six runs in the first inning. And from what I heard, I wasn't at the game, but Frontier was not afraid. They just went up there swinging. And why not, right? They're the 8 seed. They got nothing to lose. Not playing with the house money necessarily, but you're not expected to beat the number one team in the state on their home field. But those dudes they put the ball in play. Buchanan made some miscues and errors very uncharacteristically. And they went down. They lost. That was as big a shocker as you'll ever, ever find. And then Clovis West played Rigetti. If you guys remember, Rigetti as a 16 seed in Division I almost upset Buchanan. Buchanan came down to the last out, got a home run to win that game. But Rigetti comes into Clovis West and beats them 4-3. Okay. I'm surprised by that one, too. Clovis West was, I thought they were set up as well as anybody to make a run for a Central Section Championship, and they went down to Rigetti. And then Bullard, third seed, Liberty, 9-2. Now, Liberty's got a dude, Cutter Coffee. Talked about him. South Valley guy, obviously, Bakersfield. He had two bombs, two solo homers, and he had a three-run double in the second inning. Three-run double was just a laser to right center. His home runs were to left field. So, yeah, that guy is an absolute dude. And then Stockdale and San Joaquin Memorial. Memorial actually had a 3-2 lead in the sixth inning. Stockdale put up some runs, and they advanced. So our semifinals in Division One is number 8 Frontier at number 5 Rigetti, number 6 Liberty at number 2 Stockdale. Those two guys are very, very familiar with each other. You know, baseball's different, right? And especially in the playoffs, the ball could bounce in a funny way. You know, a double play that's usually turned during the regular season all of a sudden doesn't. You know, to me, it's a different animal compared to football and basketball playoffs. When you got 8 position players that might be better than the other 8 position players, but, you know, the other team's got a better pitcher, a stud pitcher, that neutralizes all that. And that's what happens in baseball. You know, football, you got 11-on-11, and, you know, it usually evens out, you know, and basketball, 5-on-5 and substitutions. I get all that. But baseball is different. We got one guy that could dominate, that could go a long way. So, yeah, so congrats to all the winners so far. The Central Section Championships are next week, Friday and Saturday. Again, they're going to be played at Fresno State, Pete Byan Field, at Bob Bennett Stadium. On Friday night, still not sure, obviously, which division is going to be represented at those places. And then the other game is going to be playing at Rawhide Stadium in Visalia. Another shocker here before we hit the break in softball is Clovis North went down to Stockdale. Clovis North was the number one softball team. They played Stockdale. And unfortunately, Ryan Maddox was unable to go. And, you know, she's the star softball pitcher, one of the top pitchers in the state and in the nation. And so, yeah, she was injured, and I'm sure that's just devastating for a program that was seeking, well, they're defending D1 champs, and they're having a magical season like Kermit. At one point, they were ranked number 1 in the state by Cowie Sports, number 3 in the nation, but they went down to Stockdale. But Clovis and Buchanan won, so they're going to be playing each other in the semifinals, and Central and Stockdale in the other semifinal. Coming up after the break, we're talking about high school baseball playoffs and more with Central baseball coach Mitch Mulligan on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN.
The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
1430 ESPN. Happy you guys could join us. I'm your host, Paul Metters. 2 hours of high school goodness for the most part. Like I teased earlier, after I talked to Coach Mulligan from Central, I got the Wax Packs book author coming on, talking about some old school baseball players and his quest to find those guys. The Central Grizzlies, man, they are hot right now. D2 semifinals after defeating Reedley and then St. Joseph. They're going to face number 5 Ridgeview on Tuesday at 4 o'clock with a trip to the finals on the line. So, Coach Mulligan, first of all, congrats. And I know you're doing some tryouts right now, so thanks for stepping away a little bit and talking to us.
Yeah, guy, thanks for having me on. You know, around here, baseball never stops. We got to find some time to get summer ball tryouts in as well. With the playoff schedule being it is what it is, you know, you never know when you can try to find some time. And so we thought today was a good day to get our youngsters out here as we get ready for summer ball season after our playoff run. So it never stops.
Yeah, absolutely. The grind never stops for sure. But what did you do last night? Did you go over scouting report? I mean, it's probably strange not to have any baseball on a Friday night. Did you get to relax with the family? What'd you do?
Can you repeat that? It's a little bit low. Yeah, the volume when you're in.
All right, sorry. Yeah, what did you do last night? Did you go over scouting reports for Ridgeview? Did you get to some time to relax with your family?
We spent most of yesterday game planning for Ridgeview, you know, obviously making some calls to see, you know, common opponents that they might have had, kind of using your contacts in the coaching world to figure out what they have. We followed their game against Bakersfield Christian, and it looked like they were in a slugfest there.
Yeah.
So just kind of going over game plan, how we're going to prepare defensively, what we could face, you know, on the mound and putting that into game plan. And then we'll continue that later today and finalize it Monday, and then we'll review as a group in our baseball P class, and we'll go from there. So we had a little quiet time with the family, which was nice. I mean, they're the kids and the wife are a big part of our program too. So we get you know, quiet nights are few and far between, but when we can, it's nice to enjoy time with them.
Yeah, you got to take advantage of that for sure. And so Ridgeview scores, they beat Centennial in the first round 4-2, and then you mentioned that slugfest, 13-12 at Bakersfield Christian. I don't know. Was the wind blowing out? You got game film? How does that work with baseball playoffs? You call other coaches and see, hey, were you at that game or what'd you see? What's that look like?
Yeah, exactly right. And you have to try to use your contacts and the coaches that you know and respect. And, you know, we'll go through their lineup and hitters and, you know, which guys have some thump and which guys, you know, struggle off speed or hunt heaters. What I do know is the Bakersfield schools are all pretty short, so you know we've been, you know, we were down at Liberty this year and we went up 6-0, and I told the boys to go 6, not enough with that lineup, and the wind's blowing out. You serve one up to Coffee, which we did, and you know it's a brand new ball game. And we've been down to Bakersfield actually my first year back when Fonz was here in 2011. We were playing Centennial in the semis, and we were up, I want to say, 8-1 after 2 or 3, and we lost a game, a haunting game. I think it was 22-10. So it gets crazy down there, man. It gets crazy. It's never enough. You got to keep adding on.
And I know that, you know, you look at stats down there in Bakersfield. You're like, well, it could be a little bit inflated. I know a lot of our ballparks play pretty big here, but I know like Austin Charles for Stockdale and obviously Cutter Coffee. I mean, no ballparks can hold what those guys can do. I know that for sure.
No, those guys are animals.
They are animals. And I saw Cutter Coffee's two bombs on, you know, at Bullard. And that dude's swing is definitely going to translate to the next level, whatever the next level is. I want to ask you your opinion on a couple things, and you know, I'm going to get into the playoff system a little bit, and then a little bit more about your games as well this last week. But when you saw those Thursday D1 scores, what was your reaction? I mean, that's why it's tough to make predictions. What was your reaction on those?
My reaction was Bakersfield showed up and showed out. I mean, they, you know, we've heard, you know, I haven't seen Stockdale in person. They didn't come down in the Coke or in the Easter Classic with that. We've definitely followed their, you know, their stats. I've talked with Labby with the Red Sox, and he's had his scout ball stuff, and he's like, dude, these guys are the truth. They can play. And so when I saw him, I wasn't, you know, necessarily surprised. We obviously, you know, have high regards for our track and our conference. And, you know, we played Frontier earlier this year and they're a good ball club, and it looks like things got a little crazy out there at Buchanan last night, but you know, Buchanan's a hell of a ball club too. And they had a great year. You know, the Liberty and Bullard game that I felt could have went in either way. They played each other early in, you know, the Coke, and Liberty had to play 4 games that week. So, you know, Coach Mills is a really good coach. He put together a good game plan. And, you know, when you got Cutter Coffee, you know, one of the best shortstops I've ever seen, he, you know, put them on their back and got it done. And I think it's just, you know, Bakersfield is a, you know, proud, you know, baseball city. And they saw the rankings and they, you know, came down here and showed up, showed out.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I think I was shocked by the Buchanan and Frontier score. I mean, 17-11. I never thought that I'd see a Division I playoff game with that amount of runs scored. But yeah, you're right, Bakersfield. You know, there's the Twitter talk, and there's, you know, the different things that you hear about that, and obviously, you know, they have a couple voices down there as far as their newspaper, but they don't have radio shows, and they don't have big personality people that are on Twitter. But yeah, they showed out. They came and they definitely took care of business. So yeah, the section championship is going to come down there. Or, you know, Rigetti had that really good game against Clovis West and beat them on the road. But I want to talk about your team as well. You know, you had really two tight games, and Reedley had a really good pitcher down there, you guys managed to pull it out in extra innings, and then your tight game that you had against St. Joe's, where you went up, and you got those three runs early, and you guys held on. But yeah, talk about those two games and who clutched up for you guys.
Well, the Reedley game, and we heard all along that Will Gagnon was the dude, and he was. I mean, he was firm. He was cruising 84, but had 87, 88 in the back pocket when he needed to. Flipping over a little breaking ball, You know, he hit a hanging changeup out early in the first inning when we were going out into a super small park down there. I mean, it's a great ballpark. It's the first time I've seen it since the renovations. Yeah. It's an awesome setup. But, you know, we were down 3-0 going to the sixth inning, and it was like I told the boys, it's, you know, you fight for another day, you fight for each other, and we either got six outs left or we can try to make a run. And we got some things together. Down Ellis had a big double to score two, to make it 3-2. And then Skylar DeWiggins clutched up, and I swear I don't know how the ball didn't go out. I thought off the bat it was out for sure, but hit the top of the wall. We tied it up. Aaron McCurley gave us six big innings. I mean, really big innings, 10 strikeouts. He had everything working. We let him down defensively a little bit to kind of gift him two runs in the third. But, you know, we tied it up, and once Klein came in and finished out the seventh on like seven pitches, and that was with our 2-3-4 hitters, and we had our top of the lineup coming up, and it was like, okay, I like our chances to get this guy on. And we got the first two guys on, and then Dallin had another big single to score a run, and Jordan Johnson added on one more, which always helps to have two runs in your favor. And then Klein got it done again in the eighth on like eight pitches, I think, so something crazy like that. And then, you know, with St. Joe's, they had that big win over Kerman. And talking with a few coast contacts, we put together a game plan, and we knew they were a big action team. They bumped 1-9, and we did a good job. We played errorless baseball. And, you know, again, Klein being the guy that he is, stepped up and gave us the CG, you know, 90 pitches and attacked the zone. And they only, I think they maybe barreled up one ball, maybe two. He just, you know, he missed barrels, mixed it up. And we got three runs there early, which was nice. We had a chance. Aaron McCurley hit a shot to right, which I thought wasn't get over the guy's head, and that would have scored all three, which would open it up. But didn't work out that way. And you know, doing like what we do, we win not easily. It's always whenever you try to get a win with the Grizzlies, so you gotta be ready to go.
Absolutely, talking with Central Coach Mitch Mulligan. What can you tell us about the health of Ryan Spolero? He's one of the top aces in the Central section. He was on the show here, one of our 1430 ESPN Student Athletes of the Week. Just a great kid overall. But how's he feeling lately?
You know, it's really day by day with him. We're taking it. We're monitoring the situation and the arm. And it's really just day by day. We might get some more clarification here early next week. Obviously we'd love to have him and make my job a lot easier, to have, you know, an arm like his, an arm that's beat, you know, Buchanan and Frontier and definitely, matches us up well with anybody. It's just, you know, we don't know right now. And so it's kind of like what we talked to the boys about, kind of like the 2008, you know, Fresno State Bulldogs who lost Shepherd, their eighth, yeah, you know, late in the years. Hey, we got who we got right now, and let's see what happens to make a run. And, you know, if we can do something really special, that's awesome. It takes everybody that we have.
And we only got about a minute here left, and we could talk about this for probably a half an hour. But, you know, the big talk is the playoff system and only having top eight teams in Division One, and then the big schools then trickle down to Division Two. Do you have an opinion either other way? You know, either way, what works, what doesn't work? What would you like to see change?
I feel like if, you know, we're going off base divisions and like we're a base Division One school, I think we should have 16 teams. You know, and it's twofold. I know a lot of people have talked, you know, in the smaller schools and feel like they're being punished for, you know, having a good year and then having to play up. And then, you know, we had four trap schools win first round games in Division Two. I think if we're going forward, we know who, you know, the 16 Division One teams are based out there. It's what they've been for many years. And I think that system works. I think having to win, you know, three games to get to a Valley Championship is a lot tougher than, you know, two games to get to Valley Championship. So I think, and talking with a couple coaches, they're kind of in agreement that it needs to go back to 16. And I think it'd make everybody else happy as well.
Yeah, I agree. There's lots to be talked about, but I know that you're Your Grizzlies are one win away from playing in the championship game. You guys take on Ridgeview at 4 o'clock on Tuesday. Mitch, thanks for your time. I appreciate you. Appreciate all the texts over the last couple of weeks, getting back to me with some information. So, yeah, so thanks for coming on. Good luck.
Thanks, boys. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
All right. Mitch Mulligan, Central High baseball coach. All right, coming up after the break, author of the Wax Pack, Brad Baloukjian. So excited to talk about this. I can't wait for you guys to hear some of the great stories about him tracking down retired Major League Baseball players and his journey on that. Coming up on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN.
The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Welcome back to the Central Valley Sports Report. I am your host, Paul Meadows, here on 1430 ESPN. Little Toto there for you guys. Love it. Love it. All right. We got the author of the Wax Pack, Brad Baloukjian, here on the road in search of baseball's afterlife. Number 7 on Los Angeles Times bestseller list, named one of NPR's best books of the year, published in 2020. What Brad did is he pulled players from the 1986 Topps baseball card pack. Some of the guys include Rick Sutcliffe, Vince Coleman, Carlton Fisk. We're going to get into Dwight Gooden. Love Dwight Gooden, Steve Yeager, over 11,000 miles. Brad, welcome to the show. I want to ask you this. If you had a walk-up song, you know, I don't know if you played Little League or whatever, what your highest level of baseball was, but if you had a walk-up song, what would have been your walk-up song of choice?
You just played it, Paul.
No way.
One of the greatest intros I've ever had. I mean, you're pulling all my favorite things. Fresno, I love Fresno. I'm looking right now in my apartment at my Fresno State coaster. And you just played Africa. I mean, we're off to a good start.
We're off to a great start. And here's a little fun fact. You know, the lead singer of Toto is John Williams, the famous composer. That's his son.
Really?
His son was the lead singer of Toto for a while.
I had no idea.
Yeah, there you go.
Wow.
Yeah, we're already off to a great start here, Brad. And I'm a fellow author as well. When I contacted you, you know, I wrote a book called Letters to BA, a prank letter book, and I went through the, you know, the creative process and trying to get the book published. And you had quite a journey to get your book published, and you know, you got rejected by what, 37 different publishing companies?
38.
So what was that journey like getting your book published?
You know, when people always misuse the phrase and they say they're humbled by an experience, they're actually flattered. No, that was truly humbling to be rejected 38 times. It was tough. I mean, I had this idea a long time ago, and I always thought the idea was novel and strong, you know, to get a single pack of baseball cards that had never been opened from the era of my youth. And then just to be beholden to whatever random 15 guys are in that pack. And just like you're playing a game of cards, like you play the hand you're dealt, right? And that kind of captured the, you know, the randomness of opening a pack, the excitement of who you're going to get. And so that was the conceit of the book. And even after, on my own dime, as you said, I drove 11,000 miles in the summer of 2015, and I found all these guys and had all these amazing experiences. I already knew the story. I had done the trip, you know, so a lot of the risk was kind of gone for the publisher. They still were like, oh, no, you know, no one knows who you are. No one knows these players. No one cares. And so, you know, University of Nebraska thankfully took a chance on me, and I'm so glad they did.
Well, the first leg of your trip was down the 99. You live in Oakland, right? You live in the Bay Area, and you – came through Fresno on their way to Visalia to visit Rance Mullenix. All right. And you know, that name should be a little more familiar in the Central Valley. You know, Rance played 16 seasons in the majors, got a World Series ring with the Blue Jays. He graduated from Menachie High School. Well, what was your memories of driving through this?
Hello?
Hey, Brad?
Yeah, I think I just lost you for a second.
Okay, yeah, so I mentioned Rance Mullenix, and he's a Menachie grad and lives in Visalia. He's an insurance salesman, I believe, or a realtor. But what were some of your memories of driving through the Central Valley?
Yeah, well, you know, and let's not underplay, 16 years in the major league is a long time. And, you know, nowadays guys don't really do that as often. But, no, Rance You know, I think part of why Rance maybe not as well known is because he's such an understated guy, just very modest, kind of low key. But I had a great time. He was so generous with his time. He took me over to Woodville, where he grew up, and showed me the actual fields where his dad would work with him every day after school. We went to the high school where he played, even saw his, I think it was his name in the rafters as a basketball player. And just kind of took me all around of that whole Visalia area, sort of showing me where he grew up, and even got the chance to watch him give a lesson to a local high school kid. And that was pretty awesome to see this ex-major leaguer, you know, in sort of still in action, showing how he swings a bat and how he turns a double play, and actually got to put my glove on myself and got to get a little hitting lesson from him, and was embarrassed by how, you know, it's no wonder my baseball career fizzled after Little League, but it was fun to get to do that with him.
Yeah, from everything that I've heard with Rance, and I still, you know, see his picture every once in a while pop up working in clinics. And did he have that mustache when you met him? That famous mustache?
No, you know, when I described him, it's like he looked pretty much the same, you know, just, you know, adding some years, but still the same mustache, the same look, yeah.
And Carlton Fisk, you know, he's obviously famous for that home run in the World Series in 1975 for the Red Sox. And, you know, I was really excited about reading his chapter because you want to read about some of the bigger names that you had. And I know you're a champion of the underdog and the utility type players and the guys that grinded on. You're a fan of that. But, you know, Carlton Fisk is a big name. And at the top of your chapter, you put quotes for each of the guys that kind of embodied what their personality was like. And you put this one for Carlton Fisk. Carlton Fisk never won any nice guy awards. Right. So that kind of set the tone for what I think we're going to get ready. We're going to read in that chapter. But he wanted nothing to do with you. Right. But you were determined. You went out there and you searched for him. And, you know, I kind of thought of the movie Fletch when reading the chapter, you went incognito a little bit and, you know, tried to create this persona of meeting this guy. But, yeah, tell us about that adventure with Carlton Fisk.
Yeah, and keep in mind that quote about not never winning any nice guy awards was written by a guy who wrote an entire biography of him, a guy named Doug Wilson. So if you're going to spend, you know, it takes years to write a book. If you're going to dedicate years of your life to writing a book about one guy and you sort of conclude by saying, guy never won any nice guy awards. I mean, so to me, that wasn't being, you know, that wasn't me sort of just being glib or saying, oh, like I've got this guy figured out. That was me deferring to the guy that actually wrote his biography. You know, that being said, I wanted to give everyone an opportunity. I wanted to meet with everyone and, you know, okay, so Fisk has his reputation. Well, I wanted to meet with him and have him tell me, you know, prove that wrong, right? Like, well, who are you then? Tell me your story. And he really, through his agent, he was just like, nope, I'm not interested in doing this. And so I always felt like as a writer, if you can't get to the source you want to write about, you know, if you're sort of willing to take the risks and you're maybe crazy enough, you can write about the story of trying to get to the source, right? So I said, at the very least, even if Carlton Fisk doesn't talk to me, I can write about the experience and the adventure of trying to find him and get him to talk to me. And that whole chapter turns into this kind of comedic bit where I, as you said, I pretend to be a millionaire home buyer at this really exclusive golf resort in Sarasota, Florida, and pose or pretend that I'm interested in buying a house so I could get on the golf course to try to find Fisk, or because I had found out that that's where he always plays golf. And so that's kind of a little bit of fun I had with the whole thing, trying to track him down.
And it didn't happen, right? You weren't able to find him, but you still were able to write about it.
Yeah, I didn't get to him that day, but I did get to him a week later. And so, you know, I did get face to face with Carlton Fisk after all that chicanery. So I'll let the reader discover how that transpired.
You are an author, man. Yeah, that is a tease. Good job there by you. Some of the other names, Vince Coleman and Doc Gooden, obviously Dwight Gooden's, you know, his career is well chronicled. He had a lot of substance abuse issues, and man, that, you know, that rookie season and that second year that he had, or, you know, I was a baseball card collector back in the day too, and I got like five of his 85 Fleer rookie cards and some of those tops as well. But man, Dwight Gooden was it. He had perfect mechanics, and I mean, he was definitely going to be a future Hall of Famer. But you know, it's a really good chapter there. And again, I'll let the reader discover what happened in that. But was there any time when you talked to some of these guys that you realize, man, these guys are human, right? These guys are, yeah, they might have some money. Yes, they might have been famous at one time, maybe even for 15 minutes. But these guys are very human beings, aren't they?
Well, you kind of nailed the whole premise of the book, that if there's one thesis that I have, it's vulnerability and the fact that we all have a lot more in common with these guys than we ever realized, right? So I think that's what I really tried to get across here, was that after having taken this crazy trip and met up with these guys, even, you know, whether the really famous guys or the more obscure guys, they all deal with the same things that we all deal with. You know, they have issues with their family. They've dealt with addiction. They've dealt with depression, you know, health issues. I mean, they're not immune to any of the things that we all deal with on a daily basis. So I think in a way that brings the reader closer to these players, not so much as fans, but as peers. And I think that's something that's, you know, it's like we're drawn to them because we're fans, but ultimately it's, I think, more interesting artistically to get to know them as people.
Were there any times when you were talking to these guys where you had to really separate yourself from being a quote unquote fanboy, you know, to being a professional, to be thinking, man, I can't believe right now I am talking to Gary Templeton? You know, was it easy for you to separate that, or do you have to pinch yourself?
I think you definitely have the fanboy inside. There's no doubt that there's a part of me the whole time that's, you know, kind of squealing with delight, just, as you said, pinching myself. I was sitting with, or my favorite player as a kid, Don Carmen, getting to spend time with him, going to the zoo and going to his house and chatting with him, or, you know, watching Kung Fu with Gary Templeton in his living room, or having Rick Sutcliffe take me around to his high school. All, you know, all these moments are sort of pinch me moments, but at the same time, I also wanted to make sure that I was doing my job as a journalist. And I recognized pretty quickly after spending time with these guys that they don't want you to make them feel special. You know, in fact, all they really want is not to feel different or special. It may be disappointing to some fans that they're not actually that enthusiastic about, you know, reliving the glory days and the home runs. And, you know, and I think that has to do with some of its self-preservation, and that, you know, it hurts too much to go back to be reminded of what you no longer are, you know, physically. But also I think that they just want to be treated like anybody else.
Talking with Brad Baluchian and the author of The Wax Pack. Brad, I want to explore that a little bit more. Did you have certain expectations for the trip? What surprised you? What maybe even, you know, were you a little disappointed with in the whole adventure? You know, were your expectations totally met with the trip?
Well, I was alternately excited and terrified going into this. I mean, actually right now I'm about to go on another 9-week trip for my next book, which is about tracking down former professional wrestlers. So I'm experiencing some of the same emotions of alternating between when in one minute I'm like, yeah, you know, this is going to be amazing. And the next minute I'm like, what is happening? Like, how can I possibly go in cold and talk to these guys who were my heroes as a kid without just completely melting down? But I think, you know, I actually say this in the book, that one of the take home messages is to be very wary of expectations in everything in life, right? That I think so much of our suffering in life comes from having expectations and then not having them met. And so I always try to remind myself, yeah, I mean, there are things I want to do. There are themes that I want to explore, but, you know, be open to change. And for example, I never expected going in that the father-son theme would be so central to the book, and how many of these guys would end up having abusive fathers and bad relationships with their dads. And, you know, it's kind of taking the Field of Dreams moment and turning it on its head. You know, this isn't just a warm and fuzzy, let's play, let's have a catch. This is like, oh, my dad was a terrible human being. And how did that play out and affect these guys in their personal and professional lives?
Yeah, that is definitely a theme throughout the book, and relationships with fathers and the expectations that, you know, you hear about, you know, daddy ball, right? You hear about that in Little League where the dads are just all over their sons and just put a lot of pressure, and then you have the absent dads. And yeah, that is definitely one of the themes that's interwoven throughout your book. And yeah, that's a theme that I really, really love throughout that. You're very human writer, I should say, for lack of a better phrase, where you put a lot of your own personality into it. You're vulnerable yourself throughout the book, because the players are vulnerable with you as well. Yeah, is that style of writing going to continue in the next book with the wrestlers? Because you think of professional wrestlers, and this is the first that I've heard of that, and that really piqued my interest too. But, you know, professional wrestling is a scary thing to probably dive into, man, because, you know, you probably got the steroid issues, and you got money issues and jealousy, and you got, right, you know, the theatrics of that. You know, what do you think about all that?
Well, even scarier, right? The thing I was talking about being terrified, like, now it's sort of even ratcheted up a level. But also, you know, the excitement is also ratcheted up. These guys were performers and sort of larger than life. So it's even, and there's even more, I think, anticipation around what are they really like as people, you know, their real identities. But to your point about the writing, yeah, I appreciate that, because that's, I always, when I'm sitting down with someone to interview them, I like to say that I will not ask you anything that I will not answer for you, right? I will, you know, if I'm going to ask you something really personal, you can ask me the same question, and I'll tell you, and you can publish it in your book if you want. I mean, I want to make sure that I'm not, you know, being unfair in that way. And I think that, you know, the approach, the style that I have, which will be in the next book as well, of putting myself in the story, you know, it can be polarizing. Some people really don't like it. Some people say, oh, like, you know, you're distracting from the book. But I, you know, to me, it's the style that I like to write in. And I think it does, I think it helps the narrative to have the reader, have the writer be a part of the story, and to admit my own biases, right? I'm not completely objective. I have these things that are very subjective. And as long as I disclose that, I think I'm being honest with the reader.
Yeah, and you use the word perfectly. You said the word narrative, right? And that's and when a reader is drawn into the story and they feel like they are traveling next to you in your Honda Accord or whatever you're driving on the next trip, or, you know, stopping
Fusion,
off it. All right, cool. All right, yeah, excellent. Or stopping off it, you know, the craziest taco stand, and your experience like that, when you draw the reader into that situation, I think that's when the book really pops. And man, now you got me excited for the next book. It could probably be another 3 years, right? Comes out.
I will be doing, just like I did with the Wax Pack, I'm going to do a blog as I go. So you can follow along and, you know, see some of it.
All right. Well, okay. So you could go to what's the best way to buy your book? Obviously, Amazon is king, right? When you think about Amazon, you know, you could get any type of book, but where's the best place to buy your book?
Yeah, I tell people wherever, you know, as the cliche goes, wherever books are sold. I always like to – I don't think there's an indie store in – well, there is one in Fresno, I think, but there's also Barnes & Noble there.
Yeah.
So, you know, any bookstore, you can get it, certainly online. If you go to – waxpackbook.com, that's the website, and I'm on Twitter at waxpackbook. So yeah, check it out.
And I have to say, though, too, when I started to read your book, actually when I saw the cover, I started to get a little jealous, right? I just oh my gosh, this guy came up with this phenomenal idea, and I did it, and he actually did it, and it's a book. But the book cover, the jacket cover, is incredible. It's probably one of the greatest jacket covers I've ever seen. It looks like a pack of 1986 Tops. It feels like it. Like, the jacket cover literally feels like a Wax Pack. It's got the little bent, kind of bents and indentations there. It looks like a Wax Pack. You know, it pops. It's got the yellow and the red and the blue. When you saw that for the first time, you're like, dude, you guys nailed it. Or did you come up with this yourself?
Yeah, well, we had discussions about it was either make the book look like the pack or go in a completely different direction. And I'm glad we went with the pack because you're right. I don't know how they got the waxy paper even. Yeah. Like it's just perfect.
Yeah, again, the wax pack book. Buy it, pick it up, buy it, read it. You'll probably, read it in 2 or 3 days. It's an incredible journey. Brad, this has been a month or so in the making, and I was very excited about this. I actually read the book twice in preparing for it. When I read it the first time, I was blown away, and the second time I picked up a few more details, and that's kind of how it goes with reading a book the second time. But again, thank you, my man. I really appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. Always, I love Fresno. You wanted a fun fact about me that no one asked about. Well, when I was like 6 years old growing up in Rhode Island, Fresno was my favorite college football team. So there you go.
All right. Nice. Yeah, we love our Bulldogs down here as well. And, hey, who knows? I know you go to a few Oakland A's games. I got some tickets coming up for next month. But, hey, maybe we could catch an A's game coming up.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, just let me know.
All right, cool. All right, Brad, thank you very much for coming on the show. Again, pick up the wax pack. I guarantee you will really, really enjoy the adventures of tracking down 14 players from a pack of 1986 wax pack Topps baseball cards. All right, coming up, we're going to be talking with Gabe Camarillo about all the wackiness, getting back to high school sports, the wackiness that has transpired this last week, and probably the wackiness is going to happen next week as well, coming up on the Central Valley Sports Report at 1430 ESPN.
In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Welcome to hour number two, Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. I am your host, Paul Metters. Sitting here at First String Sports as people come in and out on this beautiful Fresno morning. Just had a great conversation. I hope you guys were able to listen to it with Brad Baluchian, author of the Wax Pack book. The guy has had a crazy adventure finding all these former Major League Baseball players, 14 of them, that he pulled in a wax pack in 1986 Topps and went around the country and tried to find him, and yeah, I tried to get a little more of a story about Carlton Fisk, and he's like, "Oh well, you got to read the chapter." And Carlton Fisk is, let's just say, he wanted nothing to do with the book, and through his agent, didn't want to talk to Brad, and well, Brad's like, "No, man, I'm trying to go find Carlton Fisk," but go ahead and pick that book up wherever you buy your books. You could probably just get it off of if you got a Kindle. Download it and read it. Like I said, it'll probably take you a couple days to get through that book. But yeah, it's a fantastic read. So yeah, thanks to Brad for coming on. And we talked to Central baseball coach Mitch Mulligan about his Grizzlies run in Division II. They're the ninth seed. They had to go on the road and beat a really good Reedley team. And yeah, we hit on a little bit about the playoff system and what's working and what's not. We're going to bring in Gabe Camarillo right now. And Gabe just graduated. We're going to be talking about all that stuff. But Gabe just graduated from Fresno State, man. It seems like you've been on the radio and been in media since you were 13 years old, Gabe. But you're graduating from Fresno State, and now you're doing a little celebrating right now. So, yeah. So what are you doing right now? You on the beach somewhere?
Yeah, I'm walking through the sands of the Santa Monica Beach trying to get to the pier. But also talking to you about high school baseball.
Yeah, exactly. So what, you and I were at the Bullerton Liberty game on Thursday. We saw Cutter Coffey just dominate. The guy is probably going to be a Major League Baseball player one day. It reminds me a lot about of Jason Donald, just very, very toolsy and smooth out there at shortstop and has a great swing. But we were also following Gabe on Twitter, and man, what a wild Thursday. What, in your opinion, what's the best way to describe how Thursday's Division I baseball games went?
Unprecedented. They were unprecedented because I don't think I've ever seen, and I talked to Jacob Saldati, I don't think he's ever seen upsets like that before. You know, the 8 seed beats the 1 seed by scoring 17 runs. Are you kidding me? That's unheard of, especially for a Buchanan team that had a pitching that was solid all year long with Austin Watson, Jaden Mantle, to corner. I mean, these guys had sub-2 ERAs coming into the first round, and they each gave up several runs to the Frontier team that just had its best day at the plate all season. And that's kind of just what baseball is. Some teams can get hot and have their best days in the postseason and beat you any given day. So it's really, you know, it's unfortunate that all Fresno teams lost on Tuesday in baseball, but you also got to tip your hat to the Bakersfield team. We've been overlooking them here in the Fresno, and we won't overlook them anymore because you know how good they are. Three SWIL teams are in the semifinals. That league deserves credit.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, I don't know if the Bakersfield teams were slept on, because if you knew, you knew. You know, Frontier came and, you know, had some battles. You know, Clovis, they played Clovis East. And, you know, then Stockdale was a little bit of a wild card. I knew that people that scouted them said, yeah, these guys are legit. They get after it. But they didn't come and play in any games down here in the Central Valley. And then Bullard, you know, we talk about Cutter Coffee, and we know how good he is for Liberty. But, yeah, Bullard, unfortunately, you know, for them, that, you know, Liberty looked really, really strong. Bullard just couldn't put together runs. But, yeah, I mean, what a great game for Liberty. That was a statement game for them.
Yeah, and, you know, they're used to this, you know, coming up to Fresno and beating a team. They did it in football in the Division I postseason where they beat Buchanan and Central. I actually also wanted to mention real quick, there's a real possibility that all three D1 champs in the major sports, that's football, basketball, and baseball, could all come from Bakersfield. Remember this, Liberty won the D1 football title, Bakersfield Christian won the D1 basketball title in boys basketball, and now you have a possibility of three Bakersfield teams in the semis in baseball. This is unprecedented. I don't know if Bakersfield has ever had quite a year like this in the Central Section. And Liberty really is the standard bearer in Bakersfield. You know, for the Central Section teams, Liberty has overtaken Bakersfield High as of recent, as you know, the premier athletic program in all sports in Bakersfield. And they just showed it on Tuesday, or Thursday, pardon me, with her domination of Bullard. I wasn't expecting for that game to be like it was. I wasn't going to be surprised if Liberty upset Bullard, because we know what Liberty brings with Coffee and Brady Reynolds and all those guys. But I was surprised with how they routed them. And I think the main reason why it was so lopsided was the aforementioned Cutter Coffee. I mean, he was seeing the ball so well. I overheard a fan or a parent, when Cutter Coffee hit his second home run, he said, that's what the pros look like. When they're coming up in high school, that's what they look like. That swing, you know, the demeanor, he wasn't, you know, showboating or anything. And that's not to say future pros don't showboat. I'm sure some of them do, and that's fine. But he was just, you know, calm, collected, touched the plate, let his teammates celebrate him when he went to the dugout. He got things done. He took care of business. Now he's going to have to play a really good Stockdale team on Tuesday.
Yeah, those guys are definitely familiar with each other. And then going back to that Bullard game, it was a key sequence in the second inning where Bullard was one pitch away or one strike away from getting out of the inning and limiting Liberty to just one run. And the Liberty batter drew a walk right in front of Cutter Coffee. And then sure enough, Coffee just unloads and hits that three-run double to right center. And again, I mean, those home run swings were impressive, obviously. But, yeah, that being able to go opposite field and, you know, go with the pitch and hit a ball to the right side, to right field with authority. Yeah, it speaks volumes. And, yeah, Cutter Coffee definitely is one of the top players in the state and, you know, might get drafted this year. I know you interviewed him, too. What was your takeaway from your interview with Cutter?
He's very – I'm going to mention how his demeanor is calm, and a guy that a worksman, you know, shows up, does his job, leaves without much fanfare. And he says kind of the same situation with him choosing between high school and in college – well, not college. Choosing between college and pro baseball. You know, it's very tempting for some athletes to look at the money from an MLB team right out of high school and say, okay, I want to be a pro ball player. You know, it's their dream. But Cutter, you know, he has a good head on his shoulders. He knows – college might offer him the opportunity to, one, develop, and two, earn more money in the future. You know, it takes a lot of discipline and maturity to look at an MLB team and say, no, I want to play college ball because I'm betting on myself 2-3 years from now to earn more money and be a potential first-round pick. So Cutter said, you know, he's focusing on school right now, but it's a win-win situation for him because it's either he lives his dreams and plays professional baseball, or he goes to the University of Texas, a really prestigious baseball program in a state that loves its baseball.
Yeah, he's definitely a dude. And, you know, think about pro baseball players that might be coming out of the Central Section. I think it'll Brock Jones. If you guys follow on Twitter, Brock Jones, the Buchanan grad, just hit for Stanford, just hit his 12th homer in his last 20 games. The dude is on fire. You know, he's a potential first-round draft pick this year as well. Gabe, I didn't have a chance in my opener, and you usually produce a show, but again, you're walking the streets of Santa Monica Beach right now, and congrats again on your graduation from Fresno State yesterday. But I didn't have a chance to go over all the semifinals, and I wanted to do that really quick so that people are aware of who's playing on Tuesday. But we mentioned that Central and Ridgeview are playing in Division II. Clovis East, and they had a wild game. You know, we could get into a little bit and see what you know about their game against Clovis North, is going to traveling to Arroyo Grande. They are the 2 seed in Division III. Kingsburg, I have Ethan Winslow on the show coming up after the break. Number one, Kingsburg is hosting number 13, Bakersfield. This is in Division III. And Hanford is playing Tulare Western. That is a 6 versus a 7. Liberty and Madera, and we'll be broadcasting their game against Madera South. Liberty and Madera is the number one seed in Division IV. Madera South is the 5 seed. We'll be broadcasting that game on 1430 ESPN. I believe that game is going to be at 4:30. And Lamora, the 14 seed, is taking on the 15 seed Garces. We're seeing Garces again as a low seed, you know, advancing in the playoffs. Division 5 baseball, number 1 Kennedy against number 4 Fowler, number 3 Emmanuel against number 10 Fireball, and in Division 6, number 1 Sierra taking on Boron, and number 3 Mendota against Fresno Christian. Now, I talked to Coach Mulligan for a little bit, Gabe, about playoffs, and that's a hot topic, right? If you go on Twitter Spaces, and you've done a great job hosting a few of them over the last couple of weeks, and, you know, a lot of the local talk is about the playoffs, only one. Division One having 8 teams, and then the other teams seeping in. And then, just like in football, you're seeing a lot of these 13 seeds, these, you know, 15 seeds advancing. What's the general sense that you're getting from coaches and people about the current playoff system?
It's not a good sense. It's a very negative sense that I get from the coaches, and not so much the players, because the players will play whoever's in front of them. You know, the players that I've talked to haven't really minded this. Even talking to a Kerman ball player, he said, we wanted to play D2, and we wanted to earn respect as a D2 school by at least making it to the second week. And I told him, you know, dude, you got the respect of everyone in the Valley. Kerman is the most respected program around, not the most respected program, but one of the most respected programs, at least this year, because of what they did. Winning 28 straight games is no joke. But I get the sense that people don't like this because of what happened at Kerman in the playoffs. You win 28 straight games, finish the year undefeated, and you have to face the St. Joe's school. That's a private school. Not really well known in this area, but when they did play Kerman, they did take them to extra innings. And, you know, that's a lot happened in that game. I mean, it's not to say that St. Joseph overmatched Kerman. In fact, I think Kerman had several chances to win that first round game. They didn't start Devin Daniel, and maybe you got to look there. You know, if you have a winner take all game, you know, loser go home, you got to start your best pitcher. So, you know, maybe not starting Devin Daniel is a little bit Kerman in the backside there, but I do think that in the overall sense of things, looking at the bracket, some things do look a little wonky. You had Kingsburg almost lose to Edison in the first round.
Yeah.
And Edison, you know, is a public school here in Fresno that has a high enrollment compared to Kingsburg. So it's interesting, to say the least, some of these matchups. We looked at, like, the Fresno-Clovis matchup, and Fresno had a really great season. You know, they won over 20 games, but they were on the road facing a Clovis school that was middle of the pack in the track. So we'll see this weekend, or this upcoming week, how the finals shake out and who ultimately wins these divisions. But looking at how football was handled, right, Bullard won the D2 title, and a lot of people had problems with that. Looking at the basketball fiasco in Mount Whitney and how we thought for a minute there they were going to have to play Clovis West in the open division, and now looking at baseball, you have examples in all three sports where the playoff system, one way or another, was scrutinized. And I think this is going to be the straw that broke the camel's back. In terms of changing things, I think Kerman baseball is the final tipping point that we needed as a community, as the high school sports team, to say, all right, change the system, add some of the old, mix in that with some of the new, and let's just try and make this fair to the players. Because, in all honesty, Kerman playing in Division II, after seeing it in real life, after seeing things play out, I can now say an educated statement that Kerman should not have been in Division II. And now people were saying before the fact that Kerman should have been in D2. And I was like, let them play it out, okay? I saw Bullard in the football in Division II. I get that was a bad thing. But let Kerman have its chance to shock you. ultimately they weren't able to, but now I can say they shouldn't have even been in that situation to begin with.
Well, that was a good example that you used in Division II for football. Bullard defeated Bakersfield High. Bakersfield High is one of the most storied programs in state history in football. And to win a Division II just doesn't look right, especially for the old school people. You know, like, what? Yeah, Bullard, Bakersfield, Division II? Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense. And, you know, you go back to basketball, too. There was the open division. But Bakersfield, yeah, they've had a really good run here. And, again, going over some of the teams that were placed in Division II, you think about Kerman, right? And then you think about St. Joe's, who's the private school with the 16 seed. But you got Central, huge enrollment. You got Ridgeview, pretty big. A lot of the Bakersfield schools are around 1,800, 2,000 kids. You got Ridgeview, Centennial. You have Clovis North. You have Clovis East. Clovis East playing Templeton in the first round. Again, Clovis East won 8-3. But, yeah, Templeton's a small school, man. They've been in Division IV in most everything over the years and bumped up to Division II. And then you have that Clovis and Fresno game that you mentioned. A really good game. The Clovis won 2-1 over Fresno High. And then you have the Aurora Grande team as well. But, yeah, a lot of those teams, it just doesn't look quite right being in Division II. But, yeah, you know, and Clovis East had that game against Clovis North that the Timberwolves won 6-5 on a balk, right? It was a highly contested game. There was a little bit of a flare-up there if you saw anything on social media, a video. But, yeah, one thing for sure, though, is, you know, some of these teams, when you see each other a lot during the season, and Clovis East and Clovis North did, you know, with the track, you play three games in a week. So you're kind of sick of seeing the other guys. And then you match up in the playoffs, right? You're probably sick of those guys, first of all. But, yeah, what did you hear and see about that game, Clovis East and Clovis North?
It was obviously, like you said, a highly contested game. It's weird playing the playoffs because, you know, anytime two track teams face off, that's usually good. But the fact that it was in Division II obviously raised some eyebrows. There were some comments when I posted the video on Twitter that were like, wait a minute, wait, Clovis North's in Division II? Why? And you know, you had to obviously explain, well, this is a new playoff system we're doing. You know, only the eight teams that are highest in the rankings go to Division I. And it's, you know, I feel like I have to explain it to everyone when they see like a Clovis North in Division II or like a Clovis boys basketball in D3. But anyways, Clovis North and Clovis East did play in a Division II quarterfinal, and it was the last time these two teams played, it was a sour taste in Clovis North's mouth, because on their senior night, Clovis East scored 16 runs and beat the Broncos 16-2 at Broncos Stadium. And so obviously Clovis North was very amped up for this one, but so was Clovis East. You know, they're making history right now. They're having one of the best seasons in the recent history of this program. So they both had a lot to play for. No matter what division they were playing in, they both had a lot on the line. And so it obviously showed, and it spilled over in the field. A double celebration that was taken a little sourly by Clovis North, I would say. Derek Cruz, there was a video on Twitter from a Clovis East parent showing Derek Cruz running from behind home plate all the way to second base to tell the Clovis East player to knock it off. And then when that happened, that kind of escalated the situation where both benches cleared. There was some pushing. No punches were thrown. And players, a player on each side was ejected, and so were assistant coaches on each side. So it took 15 minutes to sort it out, according to Jacob Saldati, who was from the Hit or Die podcast, who was there. And I think that overall, that was actually the least controversial thing that happened, because the balk happened, and that's what ended Clovis North's season. And you got a video of it from Jacob Saldati again. But looking at the video, I think that was a balk, and it's hard to overturn that if you're Clovis North. I heard that they will protest it. It's hard to overturn it because that's a judgment call. And talking to Mike Grink, an umpire, you can't really overturn judgment calls like that. So unless it was a clear misinterpretation of the rules by the umpire, that's going to stand, and Clovis East is going to play Aurora Grande in the semifinal. But, man, what a game, and what a scrappy season from the Clovis North Broncos, who throughout this year, they gave several teams fits. Remember, they tied Liberty 4-4 earlier this year, and they've never been able to – quite get it together, but they've shown flashes of what they could be. I also just remember they beat Clovis West earlier this year. So Clovis North baseball, they deserve a lot of credit for what they did this year, and Clovis East too from moving on.
And if you saw a video between Sierra and Farmersville, there was, you mentioned how the game ended on a balk, and I don't know. I wasn't there. I didn't see it. Yeah, when you see a game end on something like that where it's an umpire's judgment call, you're just like, oh, you just would rather the kids – settle it on the field. If it, I don't know, unless it's egregious. I think you just kind of let that go. But going back to the Sierra and Farmersville game, I guess the Farmersville player was, you know, Farmersville was, you know, rallying in the last inning, and the umpire called the Farmersville kid out for being out of the batter's box for too long or something strange like that. Didn't sit well with a lot of people as well. But, you know, playoff baseball, strange things are afoot. Weird and interesting things happen in the playoffs. You never can quite tell. But, yeah, Gabe, we got a couple minutes here again. Thanks for jumping on. You know, any high school football news? Anything on the forefront? You hearing anything? And I know football season is going to be here before we know it. I know some teams are working out and getting ready for summer football and some 7-on-7 things. But what are you hearing about high school football right now?
Well, obviously, the recent news of Jackson Closter transferring back to Clovis High, that kind of shakes things up. I think that brings Clovis High into the mix. Clovis West is going to look really strong this year. 24/7 Sports recently released their ratings for these next couple classes of high schoolers, and Clovis West now has three-star receivers. You got, obviously, Marshall Sanders, who this week received his offer from Fresno State. I feel like we were all waiting for that to happen, for Fresno State football to give him an offer. So Marshall Sanders has that, but don't forget about Landon Wright and Jordan Piero. They're all going to be paired with quarterback Tyler Patrick. Clovis West, you know, they might make a little run here in the next couple seasons. And this season in particular, you might see them make a push. Buchanan and Central obviously consistently have been the top two teams in the track the last couple of years. I don't think that'll change this year. And looking around the area, Bullard losing Roland Russo, but I feel like Bullard is going to have a nice boost with Elijah Easton, the defensive end from Edison. He's a three-star. He's going to Bullard, so he's a big addition to their defense. I just think this year, with Liberty still being the strength down south, and Buchanan and Central consistently always, you know, one of the top teams in the area, I think you might have a very, very even football season in 2022.
Yeah, I agree. It's never too early to talk about football. And we got about a minute here, Gabe, but I know you contribute to the Bark Board. You're Fresno State practices, and you're very, very, very well connected as well. You got any fun facts or fun tidbits about Fresno State football right now for everybody?
Yeah, it's looking really exciting for the offense. You know, I know people are probably scared because USC just added that Belinda Koff Award winner, Jordan Addison, and now Fresno State has to worry about guarding him and, you know, covering the quarterback, Caleb Williams, and the running back, Travis Dye from Oregon. It's like USC stockpiling who's who from around college football. But I think Fresno State offensively is going to be able to match it. And Art Jackson, Mara Barkwood reports that USC's defense has really been a problem this spring. You know, there's some talk that USC is going to have to score 30 to 40 points a game to try and win these games because the defense, you know, all these additions have been on the offensive end. The defensive end's been left a little off to the side. So you might see a shootout against the USC Trojans at the Coliseum. And I know a lot of our high school listeners, they care about Fresno State football. They want to see the Bulldogs win that game as well. So I would say a tidbit for you is pick the over for points on September 17th between Fresno State and USC.
Look at Gabe graduating from college, doing point spreads and over-unders, man. I love it. Bringing a little flair to the show. Yeah, USC, man. All right, come on. I can't wait to play those guys and show them what's up here in Fresno. I think we're going to see an offensive explosion in that game. Looking forward to it. All right, Gabe, we'll definitely see you next week. Follow Gabe Camarillo on Twitter, at Gabe Camarillo. Does a phenomenal job keeping everybody up to date. Writes a blog for 1430 ESPN website. Does a good job breaking down games and matchups. Gabe, my man, have a great rest of the weekend and drive home safe.
I will. I'm going to be here for the next couple of days, so I'll have all types of things to do. And I'll think about you. Thank you for the congrats on my graduation. It's a very big thing to me, and I appreciate you.
You bet. Good job by you. All right, coming up after the break, we got the Kingsburg High two sports star, Ethan Winslow, in the house right now here at First String Sports. He's our 1430 ESPN Student Athlete of the Week. We'll be talking with Ethan coming up after the break on 1430 ESPN.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone.
Central Valley Sports Report starts.
When I was younger, so much younger than today.
Welcome back to the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. I am your host, Paul Metters. Again, First String Sports, the place to be. Come on down here, Blackstone and Sierra Avenues. It'll definitely point you in the right direction. Baseball stuff, football's right around the corner. Softball, you know, it's kind of fun when I come in here. I usually get here a little after 9 o'clock, get ready, get set up, do some last minute notes and research. And, you know, sometimes I'll grab a baseball bat from the rack and, you know, swing the bat a little bit and have some fun here. But now is the time that we talk to our student athletes, and we got a good one today. Our 1430 ESPN student athlete of the week, Ethan Winslow from Kingsburg. And we saw Ethan pitch against Central Valley Christian. You know, we did that game, and you put through a complete game, you know, 7-8 complete game. I think you threw like 91 pitches, and you're in control in that game. And, you know, I hear a lot about you, and obviously, you're a quarterback on the football team, and, you know, you got hurt though, right?
Yeah, I've been battling through some injuries the last 2 years, but this year's going to be good. Going to come back and play, so that's going to be fun.
Yeah, and you're only a junior.
Only a junior, so I got one more year.
Only a junior. Only a junior. You still got a lot of athletics left in your career, and I know you committed to play college baseball, and I'm going to be talking about that a little bit more. But like I mentioned, you're a two-sport star. You got some incredible stats right now, too. I appreciate Kingsburg High for inputting stats, man. Whenever I see stats for the high school teams, I really appreciate that. But right now you are hitting .436. You got 3 bombs, 19 runs scored, and then on the mound you're 8-1, right?
8-1, yeah.
With a 1.46 ERA. And this is what stood out to me. In 68 innings, you're only giving up 26 hits this year. All right, it's pretty amazing. Your team is 24-5-1. You got that one tie. That was a great pitching matchup, right?
Yeah, me and Murph Gray. Madera South early in the season. That was early, but yeah.
I think was that a 1-1 game?
1-1 game, yeah.
And
it was cold.
Oh. Yeah. Murph Gray is a phenomenal player.
Yeah, he is.
Going to Fresno State, he's been on the show as well. Was it weird not playing yesterday, because your game was on Thursday, right, when you guys beat Porterville 8-3?
Yeah, we played Thursday, and then yesterday we got just a little bit of practicing, a little bit of hitting, and then we got basically the rest of the day off, so yeah.
And we're going to be talking with your coach, Coach Cranford, in a few minutes as well. We're going to be talking about you with Coach Cranford. So your 3 home runs, and Kingsburg's a pretty big ballpark. Do you remember all 3 of your home runs?
And where yeah, you 2 of them were in Kingsburg, and then 1 of them was in Fowler against Fireball. I think 2 of them actually came against Fireball this year. One was in Fowler, one was in Kingsburg. But, yeah, just this year I've just been trying to drive the ball a little bit, get it out of the ballpark a little bit. But I've struggled last month, but our team's been doing really well, and we got a lot of guys that can pick me up and stuff. And the mound's – I've been great on the mound this year, and it's been fun to be on the mound and help the team out a little bit in different ways. But, yeah.
Yeah, and you're a threat on the mound. Obviously, your pitching stats speak for themselves, and then at the plate, you're a threat as well. But what about some of your teammates, man? You guys have been playing together for a long time. You guys grow up playing Little League together, and now playing high school ball for Kingsburg.
No, yeah, this team's amazing. Honestly, I think we spend so much time together during the week and stuff. I mean, we go to team dinners like almost like every day. Like, we're doing stuff all the time with each other. We're really close, and I think that's been one of the key parts to our success this year and stuff. But Houston Hirschkorn, Holden got hurt early in the season with Tommy John, so that was tough having him gone, because he was a huge part of our team too. And Garrett Perkins, Riley Beck hit a home run against Porterville,
yeah,
so that was a big part in that game. Garrett? Alex Villa-Gomez has had a great season. Nobody talks about him, but he's a legit baseball player, and he's a little under the radar, but he's having a phenomenal season. In these last 2 games, he's been huge for us.
What are some of the fun things that you guys do together as teams? Because you mentioned how close you guys are, and, you know, the good teams, they got some certain quirks or superstitions or a hangout spot, or maybe you guys play PlayStation together, get together for some Call of Duty or Madden, or, you know, what kind of stuff you guys do?
Honestly, I think this food just loves, like, this team loves eating together. Like, we can just devour some food. I mean, we literally go, we hit like every restaurant in Kingsburg, like after practice, and we can just go eat for days. Like, it's great. And we just sit and talk and laugh, and it's awesome, honestly.
All right. What's the hot spot to eat in Kingsburg? Cause I teach in Traver. I've mentioned that a bunch of times, and Kingsburg is right down the street. you know, from Trevor, I should say Freeway 99, and Los Pepes is the place.
Los Pepes, we've been there multiple times. We go to Song Hong Kong, the Chinese place. Oh, that place is great. We go there all the time. And then where else we go? Roadhouse.
Yeah.
That's a good place by the river and stuff.
Correct. Yeah, Roadhouse is just off of Avenue 384.
Yep.
Yeah, what do you get there, man? They got the legit patty
sandwich.
Tri-tip.
Yeah.
All right, they got a good, really good patty melt there. All right, so let's talk a little bit of baseball. You guys play that number 16 seed, Edison, but like Gabe Camarillo mentioned, Edison's. It's a big school, and when you're in Division III and you're the number one seed and you see Edison, you're like, oh, and because they got a pretty good pitcher there. So you started on the mound, but you guys pulled it out at the end, right?
Yeah, no, I knew a little bit about Edison. I played with a lot of those guys there, so I kind of knew what we were getting ourselves into. And when I saw we were playing, then I'm like, you know, that's not a 16 seed. You know, it just happened to be like that. They play a tough schedule and stuff, and they got put there. But I was telling the team the whole weekend, and before that, I was like, you know, this is not a 16 seed. You know, this is a legit school, and we're playing. This is going to be a dogfight no matter what, you know. And I knew Warren. I played with him since I was like 12 years old on teams, and I knew he was legit, and I've seen him pitch before, and so I kind of just told the team, you know, we got to be ready to play, and we kept it close, and we'd be able to pull it out in the seventh with Houston's double. So single, double, two run.
Yeah, was that with two outs?
No, there was no outs.
Oh, there's no outs.
Yeah, Alex Villagomez started off with a double down the line, and then I got interfered with the catcher, which gave me a single. And then I stole second, and then Houston had a single, and I came around and scored.
You were the final run.
Yeah.
What was the celebration like? I saw some pictures on Twitter. You got a really good photographer there. But what was that celebration like?
Oh, I was hyped. We're all hyped. I think I threw my helmet as high as I possibly could. But yeah, I was super hyped for that. But glad we could pull that one out.
And then you guys beat Porterville 8-3, and you're going to be taking on Bakersfield, who's the 13th seed at home. So three home games are really, really nice. As the number one seed, Ethan, do you feel like you guys are hunted, right? I mean, you guys went 10-2 in the league, and, you know, obviously, you know, you had those two losses, I think, at Exeter and Emmanuel, right? But as the number one seed, do you kind of like that target on your back, or do you feel a little more pressure?
I think we're handling well as a team. I think we just know that, you know, we're the one seed, you know, they're coming to our house, and they're going to try to come and give us their best shot, you know. So I think we're just trying to play our game and not get too into the big moment, you know, just keep playing our game.
Just play your game, right?
Yeah.
Do you know much about Bakersfield?
What I understand, I think it's kind of like Edison. They're in a really tough league.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they play Liberty, Stockdale, I know. So I think it's kind of one of those similar games, and I've watched a little bit. They played Taft, and I watched that game a little bit because Taft live streams all their games, so that's where I get a lot of my stuff from. So I watched it a little bit, and I know Taft was a good team, so I was actually surprised that they beat Taft. But same thing with Edison. They play a good league, and just have to come and play our game.
Yeah, when you think of the bigger schools and, you know, Bakersfield, and obviously, like you mentioned, they play Stockdale and Liberty. Those guys aren't afraid, right? Even though they're a 13 seed, they're not going to be intimidated by anything.
Yeah, no, they've seen the best of the best in the Central Valley, so.
You're also the quarterback on the football team. You mentioned that you got hurt. I remember, you know, reading that on Twitter that Winslow went down. I'm like, oh, my gosh, because you guys you were having a great, great season. What do you enjoy more? I don't know. That's kind of an interesting question, right? I don't want to put your – I know Coach Dave Wilson, the football coach, you know, he's probably listening right now.
And
Coach Crawford's coming in. But, yeah, you know what? Let's just talk about the differences. Let's talk about the differences between football and baseball, because Friday Night Lights,
there's nothing
like it, especially in Kingsburg.
You don't get anything – you cannot get that feeling anywhere else. I mean, when you run out of lights and there's – the whole stand is packed, I mean, there's nothing like it. So – that's one of the different things between baseball and football. And, you know, you play less games in football, so each game's a little bit more hyped up, you know. But there's just a lot of differences, you know. Football has always kept me a little bit away from baseball, so I don't get tired of baseball, you know what I mean? So, I mean, it's just I'm going to play this year, and I'm going to go out there no fear and just play my game again and try to win a Valley Championship again. You know, last year we played Bowler. That was a tough game. But, you know, it's just how it is now, you know. Those playoffs are a little bit interesting.
Yeah, and you were did you get to suit up? Did you?
I suited up, and I played like the last, like, I came in like the third quarter, I think, but I was honestly not. I was not ready to come back. Yeah. So it just happened. I just happened to be like, you know, I want to be there for the team, but I was really like last result.
And Bullard was the number one seed, and you guys were the number four seed in football. And I know this for sure because I talked to some Bullard people and some Bullard coaches as well. And, you know, I think, you know, they beat you by 3 touchdowns. Yeah. But you guys, they were really impressed by you. I should just say that. They said, you know, is a game that Bullard expected to win, and they knew they got some athletes. They got Fresno State guys going to Fresno State. But I got to let you know that Bullard respected you guys, and they understood how good you guys were. And, so you got that going for you for sure. But how about what school do you consider your rival the most? Is there a school that you get a little more hyped up for than others?
Oh, right now it's CBC.
You're talking more football or both?
For football, for sure. Even for baseball a little bit. I mean, I think baseball be my more Emmanuel, but for football, it's CBC right now. I mean, that game's always just hyped up. I got hurt in that game early on last year, so I'm excited for that one. I think it's like week 6 or 7, so.
You already got circled on for your senior year.
Yeah, that one's going to be a big one for me. I talked to Hughes. We played them at home in baseball a couple weeks back in the Sun Plays, and I was just like, that game's going to be so great. We're back in Kingsburg, so I'm like, if we're not going down this time.
Yeah, this is something we're going to look forward to as well. We got Coach Jim Cranford on the phone right now, your baseball coach. So, Coach, first of all, thanks for taking the time. I got Ethan next to me, man. He's a well-put-together young man. He's well-spoken. He's an incredible athlete. So when you're coaching a player like Ethan, you know, what does he bring to the diamond every game and in the lineup and then on the mound?
Oh, he's a complete player. Can run, can throw, can hit. You know, he's just one of those type of kids that, you know, come along every once in a long, you know, every long time. He's just a really good player.
What's impressed you the most about Ethan this year? Is it his pitching on the mound? Is it his leadership? Is it his bat? Is it, you know, what's impressed you most this year about Ethan?
His competitive nature on the mound. I mean, he's pitched in some big ball games this year. Early in the year, he carried us with his stick, and now he's doing a great job on the mound. You know, so I mean, he's just kind of a pleasure to coach.
And when I'm sure you fielded calls from college coaches about him, and I know he's committed to Cal State Fullerton, right? Made that commitment. And Coach, I talked to you after your game against CBC a little bit about him. But when coaches are calling about Ethan, what do they want to know, and what do you tell them about him?
Well, it's the standard questions. They want to know speed, arm strength, bat speed, all that kind of stuff. But the problem with recruiting now is everybody is so driven by data. They don't go out and watch kids play. And I really think that's one of the reasons why Fullerton offered him. Instead of just getting over the phone, guy came out, watched him take PP, watched the game, and I think they offered him like 3 or 4 days later. So, I mean, it was a legitimate recruiting process. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They saw the kid in person. They saw what kind of player he was. You know, he had a good game that night, but, you know, they saw the qualities that he possesses and that will enable him to play at the next level.
And your team is very, very well balanced this year. You got guys on the mound. You got a really good defense. The guys know how to swing. The guys know how to run the bases. I know that's really, really big part of your coaching style. But what do you enjoy most about coaching this year's team?
The kids like being around each other. I mean, they're the type of group you got to kick them off the field. They all want to stay and hit. You know, they enjoy each other's company. I'm not going to say that, you know, we don't have our ups and downs, but we have a lot more ups than we do downs. I mean, it's just a fun group to be around. I mean, yesterday we were going to have a short practice. By the time our short practice got over 4 to 6, because the kids didn't want to leave. I wasn't keeping them out there. So they just enjoy playing baseball.
And with this team and with a lot of your teams, Coach, how much do you focus on the mental aspect of the game compared to the physical part? When you get into the playoffs, a lot of little details pop up that might not pop up during the regular season. You got to focus on, you know, the play at hand and all those things. But, you know, as far as coaching style and coaching in the playoffs, you know, what do you like to focus on more, the mental aspect or coach up more, the mental aspect or the physical preparation?
Well, early in the year, if you can ask the kids, we're creatures of habits. We have certain drills we do every day, and we still have drills we do every day. So baseball is a repetitive game. It's not like you're going to invent something new. It's not like football. Well, football can change from play to play and stuff like that. Baseball is a repetitive game. So early in the year, we really drill the process. And then after that, it becomes mental. When we get, you know, 10, 12, 14 games into the season, they're not going to see things they haven't seen. Now it's being able to apply what they learn. So it becomes a mental game.
And so I know you – no, go ahead, Coach. Sorry. No, go ahead, Coach.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
Well, and I know you're playing Bakersfield, and they're the 13th seed, and Ethan and I talked a little bit about it. But, you know, the teams in Bakersfield, those kids can be built different, and they're used to high-level competition. You think about what Stockdale's done this year in baseball and Liberty, and then obviously what Frontier did to Buchanan. But, hey, Bakersfield's got some dudes, even though they're a 13th seed. So what do you know about Bakersfield, and how are you preparing for those guys?
Well, last night I watched film. I had some film, and I'm getting some more today, but – that league's tough because you still got six people in that league alive. So in the playoffs from one to four. So it's a competitive league. It might be the best league in the Valley right now. So we're going to go at it. And like I said, you know, it's not that we downplay the opponent, but we don't worry about the opponent. We worry about ourselves. Because if you play the game, take care of the baseball, do what you need to do, you're going to be okay. You know, and that's the big thing about high school baseball. You know, very rarely is – you know, once in a great while, you go out to a team that gets 15, 18 hits. But usually, it's around that 5-6. It's what you do to keep them from scoring and what you do when you get the hits. So, like, a prime example is the other day when we played Porterville. We only got 7 hits or 8 hits. They got 11. But we had 3 or 4 clutch hits in that deal that drove in runs. So, you know, we just kind of worry about ourselves, and we just play the game and, you know, that's all you can do. You can't control the other side. But they got some big, strong kids. And like I said, I just got some more film from some people down in Bakersfield. So I'll watch that. And, you know, and then we'll go at them and play hard and let the chips fall where they may.
Well, good luck the rest of the way. I know it helps to have an athlete like Ethan Winslow here that's sitting next to me. And I know you got him for one more year, but good luck the rest of the way. We're definitely rooting for you guys, and hope to talk to you soon, Coach. Thanks.
Well, I appreciate it. Hey, Ethan, have fun at the prom tonight.
Hey, thank you, Coach.
All right, be safe. Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks, Coach. All right. Yeah, it's prom night, right? My daughter goes to Bullard. It's prom night for her as well. So, yeah, big night. You got a big day for you today, Ethan, coming on the radio. Got prom. Yeah, for sure.
I got to go watch my brother play a little bit of baseball, too, in a little bit.
Yeah, where's he playing at?
Fig Garden. He's my little brother. He's way better than I am.
All right, yeah. So good timing, right? Come up here to Fresno from Kingsburg, go watch some baseball at Fig Garden. How tall are you?
I'm probably 6'1". 6'1"? 6'1", right, probably, maybe a little bit shorter right there.
No basketball? Basketball?
No basketball. No, I always mess with the basketball coach. I always tell him I'm coming out. I never come out.
I'm sure they could use you, play some defense, get some rebounds.
I can't shoot. That's my problem. No shot at all.
All right, can't shoot. All right, so we talked about your commitment to Cal State Fullerton. Was it always a goal for you to play Division One, or is it just something that happened, or what did that look like?
No, I think it was something that I just had from the very, like, a goal from the very beginning. You know, once you kind of get to a level and you kind of realize, like, what you're capable of a little bit, and I think that's just where I wanted to be, and, you know, I just worked as hard as I could. Obviously, I went through a couple injuries, obviously, I told you, but just this, I put a lot of work into this specific season to get back, and it's paid off since for now.
Yeah. So who from Cal State Fullerton called you? Was it the head coach that called you and said, "Hey, Ethan, we liked what we saw. We want to offer you a scholarship." And would you like, "Yeah, I'll take it," or did you think about it for a couple of days?
Basically, I actually got in touch with them through Twitter. It's funny. A lot of the coaches are on Twitter now. If I had any advice for like a younger kid right now, I'd definitely be to be on Twitter and like get yourself out there a little bit. That's how you, I mean, that's kind of what I did. I was just posting videos of me hitting like during the summer and stuff. And I got some coaches to follow me, and, you know, DM, some DM back, some don't. But basically just, he texted me and we just started talking. And I knew from the very beginning it's actually Coach Belosky. They had a whole new coaching staff to come in, and he's basically a recruiting coordinator and assistant coach there. But, I just kind of like formed a good relationship with him, and over the phone we talked a couple times a week. We just talking. He was finally like, you know, I want to come out and watch you play. So he came out like on a Wednesday, and then I went over there and watched the game and got to like kind of go around and visit the campus a little bit. So I think it all just kind of like fell into place, and I really liked it there. And I met the other coaches, and they were great. So it seemed like a great fit for me. And I was talking to other places, but I just think that was the right fit for me, and I love the coaches there and just want to play for them.
Oh, perfect. That's awesome. That's a great story. We only got about another minute here. Have they told you if they're going to recruit you, or they want you to pitch, or they want you to hit or play the field?
I'm probably going to play outfield. I mean, I'm a good pitcher. I don't really throw that hard. I'm just trying to throw the ball past somebody. Yeah. I literally get up there and try to throw as hard as I can past the guy. But I'll probably play the field. I mean, who knows? Maybe I grow into becoming a pitcher somehow. But honestly, right now, pitching was kind of meant just to be like something I do to compete with this, like be competitive with the team, you know.
All right.
But, yeah.
So what outfield spot do you prefer?
Left, center, right? Right now I'm playing center, but I'll probably move to a corner outfield spot when I'm older, I'm assuming, probably like left or right.
Okay. Yeah, you kind of look like a left or right fielder. You, what do you weigh, about 180, 190?
I'm close to 200 now.
You're close to 200?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. So maybe this summer you could take a little bit of weight off and, you know.
You muscle up
a little bit. All right, Ethan Winslow, Kingsburg High, our 1430 ESPN Student Athlete of the Week. They take on Bakersfield. Is it going to be a night game on Tuesday? Do you know?
No, it's going to be an early game. They didn't want to play at night, so 4:30. It's hard to get to the move. They're from Bakersfield, so they have to go all the way back. So
it's a good point. Yeah, night games are fun at Kingsbury. That's too bad. All right, Ethan, thanks for coming on. Congratulations on your scholarship offer, and good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you.
You bet. All right, coming up after the break, we'll be wrapping the show up. Fun 2 hours here on 1430 ESPN.
The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Welcome back to the Central Valley Sports Report. I am your host, Paul Metters, wrapping up a fun 2 hours. 2 hours of sports, like 94% high school sports, and today was one of those days where I deviated a bit. Just want to thank author of the Wax Pack book, In Search of America's, what is it? Hold on. On the Road, In Search of America, In Search of Baseball's Afterlife. Go ahead and find that book on Amazon. Author Brad Baluchian, just had a great conversation with him at 10:30 about how he opened up a pack of 1986 Topps baseball cards. And whoever he pulled out of that pack, he went out and tried to find them. And he traveled 11,000 miles looking for all these guys, including Carlton Fisk, Vince Coleman, Rance Mullenix, who lives in Visalia right now, went to Menachie High. And then I found out through the interview that he's doing the same thing. He's doing a follow-up, but not about baseball, but about wrestlers. That piqued a lot of people's interest. I got a few texts after that segment like, what? Former wrestlers? That's going to be a great book. Can't wait to follow that experience that he has. He said that he's going to be posting his experiences on a blog as well. So, yeah, I'll be sure to tweet that out and retweet that when those things pop up. So, yeah, great conversation with Brad there. You can go back and listen to all the episodes on the Central Valley Sports Report on the 1430 ESPN Fresno website. All of them are archived there, as well as some of the games that we've done. I think all the games, actually, all the high school football, basketball, and baseball games that we broadcasted are archived on that. So let's say, you know, your son or daughter, we did a softball game, your son or daughter played in the game, baseball playoffs in Division II, and Ethan Winslow from Kingsburg High did a great job. You could tell, you know, when young men are going to have a bright future, and Ethan is definitely one of those guys. Also want to thank Coach Jim Cranford for jumping on and talking about Ethan and his program as well. So, again, thank you guys for listening to Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. We're going to be broadcasting the Liberty Madera and Madera South game on Tuesday at 4:30. So make sure you guys check that out. And in closing, be kind, be generous, be passionate in everything you do, and leave it all in the field. Talk to you soon.